You're listening to EuroCities Podcast.
My name is Dorte Nielsen. I'm Executive Director for EuroCities. Thank you very much for joining. We will first hear a brief introduction from the European Commission. We will then have a keynote from Deputy Mayor of Paris, and we'll then move on with a panel discussion. And after that, there'll be opportunities. We hope there's enough time to also have some Q&A with the all of you. So 400,000 premature deaths every year. It's a depressing perspective, but that's what we are looking at when we talk about sort of premature deaths related that is caused by air pollution. Now, at the European level, there's now the Zero Pollution Action Plan, whereby improving air quality to reduce these numbers of premature deaths is also a priority. By 2030, the EU aims to halve the number of premature deaths. And this implies also to address the sources of emissions, because one of the main sources of air pollution is emission from transport. So as the European Commission is preparing for this new generation of vehicle emission standards and air pollution standards, as we know as Euro 7, we wanted to have a quick touch base with a range of stakeholders here today to discuss what are the issues. I was saying, what is at stake? Why does it matter? And to kick off our discussion here, I'm really pleased to welcome Penny Dilara, who is a team leader in the Clean Vehicle unit in DD Grow from the European Commission and in charge of drafting the next regulation. So give us, and Penny, you'll give us an overview of the of what we can expect, what's in the pipeline from the European Commission. Welcome and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Good afternoon, everybody. I would like to thank you, first of all, for this nice event and for the opportunity to listen to the debate, which is definitely interesting. I will take you to a brief tour. Let's say in the past, in 2015, we all heard about Dieselgate. We got familiarized about emissions on the road and in the laboratory. And unfortunately, the picture was quite dark. Since then, I think we have proceeded with a lot of activities in the European Commission. We made legislation by upgrading our Euro 6 regulation to introduce real driving emissions test. We have also put in place a modern and effective type approval and market surveillance framework. But of course, this is not the end of the road. We know and we are aware, as you are, that there is a need to modernize further and to reach something that can contribute to the European Green Deal and its two pillars, one on accelerating the shift to sustainable and smart mobility, and also the zero pollution ambition for toxic-free environment. I think this is of high importance. So we need to make sure that the legislation we have and we are putting together is safeguards clean air and the health of the citizens, while on the other hand provides a stable and clear regulatory framework for the industry, combined always with good compliance mechanisms. And I think this is a key. Now, the transition. You have all seen the Commission proposal for the CO2 targets, the end of internal combustion engine for cars and vans by 2035, and you know also that we are working in a parallel activity for the heavy-duty sector. This second proposal is due next year. In the meantime, however, we have to ensure that cars and vans that are put in play in the market until then are as clean as possibly they can be. And the reason for this is that even though the sales might stop in 2035, the cars will remain in the streets for another 10 to 15 years. So they will continue to pollute our streets, and therefore we need to act. We need to act now. The need is obviously even greater for heavy-duty vehicles like buses, delivery trucks, long-haul trucks, etc., because the shift towards zero emission mobility will take even longer. Now, what have we done in preparation for Euro 7? Since 2018, we have been working diligently with meetings almost every month with more than 250 experts in the field in what we call Advisory Group on Emission Standards, ACVES. And the goal of that was to gain a broader understanding what can be technically achieved, because this is one part of the equation. We have also launched six independent scientific studies that increased our understanding of the problems and the possible solutions. Now, after all this activity, we see ample room for improvement on the following aspects. We need to simplify the rules. We need to make more demanding pollutant emission limits and testing conditions. We need to have limits that are technology and fuel neutral, and we need to ensure that the emission performance is guaranteed throughout the lifetime of the vehicle, not only in the beginning. Now, together with all of this, we know that technologies exist in the market today that are ready to help us achieve this result. So we're not even speaking about new things that might come in the future, or fantasy things that are very hard to get or very innovative. Now, so we know that the transformation is happening before our eyes. I don't know if you have seen the latest results, but I just checked them this morning. We have diesel vehicles. It's only 17% of the sales in Europe right now. Battery electric and hybrid together is 30%. So the situation is rapidly changing. We have also seen announcements of all major car manufacturers planning to go electric very fast, much sooner than we could have hoped only a couple of years ago, and this is very important. And we have also heard some truck manufacturers announce the same thing, that they are planning now for the zero emission future. So we know that apart from Euro 7, we also need to support this rollout with adequate infrastructure, with partnerships for development technologies of the future, like battery, hydrogen, and investment in skills as the last part of the equation, because the transition might lead to reskilling. People will need to shift their works. But the most important is, and with this I conclude, is that we need to ensure the industry stays on course and the citizens benefit as much as possible from modern technologies and from cleaner air. So thank you very much. That was my opening.
Thank you very much, Penny. Penny, are you staying with us for?
Yes, I will stay and listen.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much. We can welcome to come back in later. Then it's my pleasure to introduce the Deputy Mayor of Paris in charge of ecological transition, the climate plan, water and energy, Dan Leertz. Dan, thank you so much for joining. Now, over to you for our keynote intervention here for this session.
Thank you, Dorte. First, I would like to thank EuroCities for allowing me to introduce this conference and share the point of view of the City of Paris on the new Euro standard implementation. According to the latest report of the European Environment Agency published in November 2021, air pollution is the first environmental impact on health. More than 300,000 people died prematurely in the European Union in 2019 because of the fine particles, and more than 40,000 died of nitrogen dioxide. Moreover, it is the most disadvantaged populations, often living along heavy traffic routes and more sensible to environmental impacts, who are the most affected by air pollution and in the same time by noise pollution. Road traffic is indeed one of the main contributors to air pollution in the cities. In Paris, the limit values of the 2008 European Directive are exceeded for NO2 along the main traffic roads, leading to a high exposure of 250,000 people in a population of 2.1 million, according to Air Paris. The good news is that air quality is improving in Paris. Concentration of NO2 and fine particles have been reducing by 50%. For the past 20 years, the city of Paris has acted to reduce road traffic emissions at source. The city has rebalanced public space, giving the priority to active and clean mobility and to public transport. The result of this policy are important, with a drop in the volume of motorized traffic in recent years. Road traffic in Paris has decreased of 43% since 2002, and the pace is accelerating in the last year with an average drop of 5% per year. In the last 5 years, Paris has implemented the first French low emission zone. 1,000 kilometers of cycle paths were implemented. The banks of the Seine River, who had been transformed into highways, were given back to pedestrians and cyclists. Areas were closed to traffic on Sundays to offer entire quarters free of polluting vehicles. As a matter of fact, the Champs-Élysées were transformed into a pedestrian area every first Sunday of the month. This action must go on according to the ambitious plan for climate, air and energy set in 2018, aiming to comply with European limit values by 2024 for all Parisians and to comply with WHO recommendations by 2030. Indeed, the situation is still alarming and much remains to be done. All Parisians are exposed to NO2 and to fine particles concentration that exceed the latest WHO recommendations of 2021. The new Paris cycling plans aims to make the city 100% made for bicycle by 2025, in particular with the Corona cycle path set in 2020. The project Rue aux Écoles school areas will turn the streets around schools into permanent pedestrian areas, protecting the children from local pollution emissions and road insecurity. The low emission zone is now metropolitan, led by the Greater Paris Metropolis, covering 7 million inhabitants. Today, private diesel vehicles older than the Euro 3 standard are banned from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. On weekdays. Next year, a Euro 4 diesel and Euro 2 and 3 petrol vehicles will be banned. We are working with the national government to set an automatic control by 2022. Our goal is to ban all diesel vehicles in 2024 and all internal combustion vehicles in 2030. Our low emission zone can only be successful with efficient Euro standards. The city of Paris considers that the improvement of the Euro standards were too slow in the recent year, especially for diesel cars, which are still polluting much more in real life than announced in the standards. The successful complaint of the city of Paris with Brussels and Madrid against the compliance factors set by European Commission on Euro 6 for NOx emissions of diesel cars allow to pollute twice more in real driving condition shows that despite of the Dieselgate, things are still going too slow at the European level. It also shows that cities are important stakeholders of air quality and must be able to plead for the health of the citizens. The assessment of the Euro 6 standard carried out by the European Commission has shown that the real life emissions of some vehicles are lower than required by the regulation. This is demonstrating the technical feasibility of tightening the next Euro 7 standard. Based on these findings, the city of Paris fully embrace Euro Cities and Transport and Environment joint call for the most restrictive Euro 7 standard as possible, with a complete revision of the Euro 6 version. We are particularly insisting on certain points of the standard, which should make it possible to, which should make it possible to reduce emission in real driving conditions. Firstly, emission limits must apply in all conditions in which vehicles are designed to travel, and in particular in urban areas. The adaptation of the standard for the cold start phase, which represents a large part of the trips in town, should be as limited as possible. The additional emissions package provided for the first 16 kilometers should be limited to the first 8 kilometers. To be effective, compliance with emission limits should also apply to the entire lifetime of vehicles and equally to all vehicles, regardless of their motorization, with no exception for diesel vehicles. Secondly, all particulate emissions should be taken into account, including non-exhaust emissions from brakes, tires, and road. They represent 40% of particles emitted by road traffic. We demand that the Eurostat standard include a particulate emission from braking systems. This is a significant gain that is within reach, and the effort asked to manufacturers seems reasonable in regard to sanitary stakes. This effort will be sustainable because it will also benefit to electric vehicles. Paris City is involved in this topic. We are working with the Talano company to launch a new experiment with its Timex system, which pumps and filters particles emitted by brake pads. We plan to equip next year a heavy goods vehicle and a drum truck of the municipal fleet with the device to assess its efficiency. The Talano device has already been tested on a Renault Zoe of the city in 2018 with very encouraging results, 87% reduction of mass particulate emission over 10 months of testing. We would be delighted to collaborate with other European cities who would like to be associated with the project. In addition to particulate matter and NOx, the Euro 7 standards should also include all pollutants harmful to human health and the environment, including ultrafine particles, ammonia, and methane. Air quality is a major issue for the city of Paris and for all European cities and metropolis. The Euro 7 standard must be as ambitious and strict as possible. It is the condition to improve the health and quality of life of millions of European people in the coming year. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dan. Thanks for this introductory keynote. Very interesting to hear of all the achievements and the very good results in Paris. And I think it's fair to say that the transformation of Paris is also very visible for visitors in terms of at least in terms of bike lanes that you spoke about in and presence of bike that you spoke about in some details now. Thank you for the inspiring and ambitious goals for Paris and the very clear recommendations then for what is expected next at European level in terms of ambition and how that is necessary to help cities achieve the quality of air that they need to protect the health of citizens. So thank you very much, Dan. I would now like to move on with introducing our panelist. We have with us Martin Lutsch, who is head of air quality management and co-chair of our Eurocities Air Quality Working Group from the Berlin Senate Department for Environment, Transport and Climate Protection. Welcome, Martin. We have Robin Loos, who is the Sustainable Transport Officer from BUIC, the European Consumers Organization. Welcome, Robin. And we have Fabien Sperka, who is Vehicles Policy Manager from Transport and Environment. Thank you for joining, the three of you, and welcome. And so I wanted to kick off by asking you a question, Fabien. Now, we've heard now from the European Commission what the plans are. Now, this the Commission's proposal to phase out fossil fuel vehicle by 2030 is something that TNE has also been a strong advocate for, as it's a way to also decarbonize transport. And zero-emission vehicles will also have a positive impact on air quality. And I think Penny, to some extent, also touched upon this. But still, why do you, from the perspective of TNE, think that we still need then a Euro 7 proposal to tackle air pollution?
Yeah, thank you, Dirt, for that. Indeed, TNE is strongly supporting phase out of vehicles with an internal combustion engine. And it's also clear that every vehicle that is combusting fossil fuels, but also synthetic fuels, will never be able to be really clean. And this is true for fossil fuels, as I said, but also for synthetic or e-fuels. And TNE will release a report on Monday on this, actually. But still, so between 2025, this is the year when we hope to expect that Euro 7 will enter into force, and 2035, our estimations are that there will still be 95 million ICE cars being sold in Europe. And I mean, just to give you a perspective on that, this is more or less a third of the total vehicle stock we see today. Alone in 2025, we will see 12 million new cars sold, and those will have an ICE car mostly. So that's the one reason. The second reason is then that if you look into data from, for instance, from ASEA, the average vehicle age in Europe is 11 and a half years. But in Romania, it is 16 and a half years. In Estonia, 16.7 years. So in total, we see 17% of all vehicles on European roads are between 15 and 25 years old. So you see, this 95 million additional ICE cars will stay for a long time on our roads. And it is especially problematic for member states with lower GDP, where the per capita, where the share of vehicles with internal combustion engine is significantly higher and the cars are significantly older. So we also have seen, and Penny touched upon that, that for trucks and buses, so far, I mean, TNE is also advocating for that, but so far there is no phase out date. And only 7% of new truck sales by 2025 will be zero emission, according to the numbers of truck makers. And again, trucks are, of course, I mean, there are way less trucks than cars on our roads, but still, for instance, in Madrid, 21% of NOx emissions are originating from heavy duty vehicles. And also these vehicles are also significantly older than cars or vans. So it's 12 and a half years on average in Europe, but for Southern Europe, that can be as high as 21 years almost. So having seen that, is, of course, we are supporting a phase out of zero emission of internal combustion engines, but still within this next 10, 15 years, we'll see a huge amount of ICE cars coming or vehicles coming to the road. And the only way to guarantee a significant improvement of air quality across Europe, not just in the Western and Northern European member states, is to have an ambitious Euro 7 proposal. Thank you.
Thanks, Fabien. Yeah, that adds a couple of elements to the conversation, of course. Yeah. Now then, if I turn to you, Robin, the implementation of the EU framework on vehicles air pollutants was marked by the diesel scandal, which many of us still remembers very, very clearly. The diesel scandal had a very clear impact on consumers, and some of those consumers were left without compensation. So what would you say are the lessons learned from this scandal, and how can those lessons learned be integrated into the future of the regulatory framework?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the questions, which is good. Today we are surrounded, I am surrounded by experts who have great insight on what is achievable and the technicalities of the file, you know, when we're talking about pollutants, the emission control systems. And I have to say, it's just a preliminary statement that I would like to say. I think the work done by the Commission to prepare the new standards in light of scientific evidence, it's to my knowledge, at least, unprecedented. And I'm happy to see that the work done based on science is done in a thorough manner. But from a consumer perspective, as you said, then how can we take the lessons from this? The main lesson learned, I think, is that the regulatory framework clearly lacked. As I said, the regulatory framework clearly lacked a culture of enforcement. You know, rules seemed nice on paper, but they were easily broken. And it took us quite some time to uncover the Dieselgate scandal. And in fact, it wasn't even us Europeans discovering it, it was the Americans. So that's the first thing, enforcement, or this culture of enforcement. And of course, since 2015, our members from the BEUC network have, you know, tried a lot and made significant efforts to obtain redress for the millions of consumers affected. But we see how difficult it is and how lengthy the procedures can be. And to be fair, and that's a side note, I'm not sure our members are a big fan of the actions that they are undertaking for the last 6 years. They would like not to have those. But it shows that we need enforcement, and that means that, I mean, that means several things. The first one is that we should consider air quality as a basic consumer right. And that's not even BEUC saying it. It's the WHO who said it when they released their new air quality guidelines. I think that's the first thing to consider. And that means that when you measure emissions, you need to measure them on the road. And these measurements on the road needs to be used as compliance tools, because this is where cars are driven. This is where consumers actually drive their car. The review of the so-called type approval regulation brought some good improvements, has to be acknowledged. You know, national authorities, the EU Commission, they have new power now, but they need to use that power. And I think we are still waiting for actions to be undertaken, from these actions. And we also need legislation, and that's my last point on enforcement. We need the legislations to be properly enforced. It means, as Penny said, that it needs to be clear and simple and related to what consumers do on the roads. And if you have all that, and if you complement that with proper information to consumers, you can reach a goal. And proper information means that when you go as a consumer to the dealership, you are able to understand what the Euro standard means, to compare emissions from different cars. And that could be done via also another EU tool, which is the Car Labeling Directive, which is quite old now. It's from 1999, so it doesn't give quite the clear view of what cars actually emit. But I think if you add information to enforcement, you can get to a level of what a good standard can be and how it can be properly implemented at EU level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin. A very interesting point. And I think that point about whether air quality can be considered or should be considered a basic consumer right all across Europe, if that's something that we'll manage to achieve and it's something that can be agreed upon even by member states, might be something interesting to discuss. But maybe something to come back to later. I wanted first to see with you, Martin, now if we look towards then the situation in cities, how is it going with them tackling the air pollution emissions from transport in Berlin? Is the development going in the right direction?
Thanks, Dörte, for having me here and for that question. Because I could say, well, we've met all air quality standards last year for the first time. And at last, the one on NO2. That's great, but it's 10 years too late. And it's unfortunately the same story for PM, for a particulate matter. If you look back 15 years, then we were in a situation where we had exceedances all over the place of the standards, although they should already have been met in 2005. Then we came up with a low emission zone, as Paris have been doing as well. And we managed to drop the black carbon concentrations, you know, this diesel suit stuff, by 80% alone because of that low emission zone by 50. But this was an emergency action. It was a severe intervention. And normally you would expect that the European emission limit values for vehicles would do the job. They did the last 30%, but only as from 2015 onwards, when we got Euro 5 and Euro 6 equipped with what we lacked in 2005. And that was the diesel particle filter. You could still have in the showroom at that time Euro 4 without a diesel particle filter. This was technology available, best available technology at that time, but it was not required. And so this is, I think, a major flaw in the whole system, that the source-related regulations always delivered too less in relation to meeting the air quality standards. And it should be the other way around. And this is the answer to your questions. Are we on the right track? Yes, we are. And as Vice Mayor Lert said, it's the same in Berlin that NO2 goes down. That's nice. But the interesting question is, at what speed? Is the speed sufficient? And as I was saying, it wasn't in the past. So we may need to make sure that we do it in the right sequence. Firstly, agree on a set of new air quality standards, and then look at the source regulations, inter alia on transport and vehicles, and then design them so that we meet, to a large extent, the air quality standards set. And this is why I would ask urgently Dilara and DG Growth to sit together with the colleagues in DG Environment and make sure that the two processes, air quality standard setting, which is ongoing, and the setting of Euro 7 is coherent, so that we won't fall in the same trap as in the past.
Thank you, Martin. Although that Berlin is on a very good track and it's going well, I also understand that you are not being complacent, and you also say that it's necessary to speed up. And then a strong call for intra DG coordination within the European Commission. Thank you very much. Then, Fabien, if I may come back to you, then what do you think then should be the priorities for EU policymakers when working on the future Euro 7 proposal?
Yeah, maybe to thank you. Maybe to touch upon what Martin said. I think we see it in a similar way when it comes to the ambition of the proposal. Because I mean, there are many cars out there that under the regulated driving condition, let's say, meet already the limits or emit significantly lower emissions. So what Euro 7 needs to ensure is that we have something that is actually ambitious, that actually really improves also and force in a way OEMs to come up with new technologies to really save emissions, and not just mere facelift of the Euro 6 standards. So what we think should be the minimum requirements for the Euro 7 regulation is that with this proposal, the EU needs to set the lowest limits globally, and basically the lowest limits that are technically possible with the technology available. and affordable in a way. Secondly, it needs to be, but it's important that we don't regulate only the substances we have regulated in the past, but also all other relevant pollutants that are harmful to human health, but also the environment. And that includes particles that are smaller than 23 nanometers, ammonia, nitrous oxide, formaldehyde, and also non-methane organic gases. So all of this was already proposed by CLOVE, but it really also should be included in the proposal. The third point I want to make is that those limits need to apply for all driving conditions. So wherever and whenever a car is driven, and not as today that you have, for the cold start emissions, I mean, you have a budget is way too high, for instance. Or for instance, if you drive your car in a hilly region, then the limits don't apply anymore. Or also in situations that are more and more common. I mean, in Northern Europe, you have minus 10 degrees quite often, and limits don't apply there. Or in Southern Europe, but also in now even more in Central Europe, you have temperatures above 35 degrees, and then also limits don't apply. So this needs to be changed from our point of view. The last point, which is not the least important, but it's my last point here now, is that vehicles need to comply with the limits for the entire lifetime. So if you look at cars, it's only the first 5 years are actually controlled. So after that, a car in theory can pollute whatever it may pollute, and nothing is regulated anymore. So from our point of view, it needs to be at least 20 years, given the fact that you have a lot of cars, especially in Eastern Europe, that have that age. And for trucks, the compliance with the limits should be met at least for the first 1.3 million kilometers. And maybe one last point is that we need to set the limits that are the same for petrol, diesel, and for trucks, that's very important, also for gas. So because we need to set the same limits for every technology and not different limits for different fuel types. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. So very summarized. So the first point is the lowest limit values possible. Second point is regulate all matters relevant. And the third one is that limits apply in all conditions. And then the fourth point about applying limits all through the life cycle of the cars, and then all same limits for all types of technologies. Thank you very much. Then Robin, if I come back to you, then the automotive industry has argued that these that stricter limit values and the in a new regulation could make the remaining fossil fuel vehicles too costly for many consumers. And we are in a context of a lot of political promises and a real need to ensure that a green transformation of Europe is also just, and that it doesn't put vulnerable groups at a particular disadvantage. So keeping that in mind, so does the automotive industry actually have a point here? What do you think?
I think it's fair to put Euro 7 in context. And first, we have to acknowledge that for each standard, be it CO2 standard or Euro 7, we heard this cost arguments coming up quite often. Some even saying that, you know, it would simply bring their business to the ground. I don't think we need to exaggerate the cost arguments. It is important. But behind this cost argument, we usually ended up with inflexibilities, more lead times, or make the rules, as I said at the beginning, difficult to apply or really unapplicable in practice. If you think about the conformity factor and how it has been introduced, the way it has been introduced, the way it is now discussed in front of the Court of Justice and the discussions that were stuck in the Council and the Parliament, it seems quite strange, while more and more scientific evidence keeps suggesting that actually this conformity factor could be simply scrapped. So I wouldn't be affirmative as the cost being the predominant question here. And even the Commission has acknowledged that the cost would be fairly limited, between 100 and 500 euros per car, while with existing technology, as Penny said at the beginning. But this is a challenge. I'm not diminishing the importance of a couple of hundred euros for consumers. But that's why I say we need to put it in context. Euro 7 will target new cars, probably in 2025, 2026. And there you have, therefore, some sort of double trend. First one to recall is that the vast majority of EU consumers don't buy new cars. Of course, you would think of markets like Poland, Bulgaria, or Eastern European markets, where, as Fabian said, the average age of cars is above 15 years old, and people buying second or third-hand vehicles. But that's also the case in Belgium. In Belgium, almost 60% of new cars are bought by leasing companies. So it's a trend that is everywhere in Europe. And when Euro 7 would enter into force, we would have sustainable alternatives. I'm talking here about, of course, electric vehicles, where we showed, as in a study that BEUC did, that they can already today be the best financial choice for some consumers. And in 2025, they would become a concrete alternative for almost everyone, with hopefully the deployment of charging station and everything to make it more convenient. So, of course, the cost arguments must be carefully monitored, and I'm not satisfied with the numbers we have today, because it needs to be clearer, and it needs to be also, when someone is talking about these cost arguments, I would like to hear some numbers, which I don't hear quite often at the moment. But when alternatives are there, I think from a consumer's perspective, and that has been BEUC's position for quite some time, you can have a price signal if you have a sustainable alternative that is convenient and affordable. And I think with the measure of the Green Deal as a package, you can get there. So that would be my main message on the price and cost arguments.
Thanks, Robin. Then Martin, coming back to you, how do you see this Euro 7 regulation in its revised, how do you see that complementing the efforts of European cities to improve air quality at European level, now that you've spoken about the challenges? What would be the priority from the perspective of cities and local authorities?
Yeah, I think it's a huge milestone towards achieving WHO. This is, Penny has mentioned the Green Deal and the Zero Pollution Action Plan, where the Commission pledged, we will align our air quality standards more closer to WHO. And we have seen that WHO has set the benchmark quite high now for NO2, reducing the guideline level from 40 to 10. And so Euro 7 will be the key instrument to lead us there. And it's important because if you think about exposure, where you breathe, when you bike or walk on the pathway, it's only a few meters from the exhaust. So, I mean, it directly determines the exposure and thus the health impact. So this is absolutely key to make progress. And I think it has been said by Penny as well, I think, if I remember, that we have seen technological progress. So I have been following two meetings of that Arquis group, and what the GLOVE consortium presented in terms of measurement was impressive. And if I look into what is called the Handbook of Emission Factors, this is our huge toolbox with emission factors for all sorts of driving profiles and types of vehicles. And it's also projected towards the future. And then I took this number. It's astonishing that even in 2030, the NOx emission of a passenger car will be still around 350 milligram per kilometer. Euro 6 is 80 for diesel. Huh? I mean, this is still very high. So we need the next step to bring us down as soon as possible and as far as possible. And I mean, it has been said by Fabien already, what is important. Let's iterated cold start emissions during low driving, driving mode, the particles to cover also the even smaller ones down to 10 microns, because they directly penetrate into our blood system. So this is important as well. Include the DPF regeneration into that cycle. Durability has been mentioned. I like to have a warranty by manufacturers, that they step in if there is something wrong and repair it and rectify it. I think that's the list. Accelerations was something, and may I disclose that, where we have the results of a pilot project looking into the pollution depending on the speed limit imposed. And we saw that if we reduce the speed limit here from 50 to 30 kilometers per hour, we see a 2 to 4 microgram decrease of NO2. And this is because we force vehicles to smooth more, to drive more smoothly and avoid accelerations. That's a good indicator that accelerations are still a very sensitive part of the driving mode. And it's extremely difficult for an exhaust gas treatment system to avoid emissions of NOx during these phases. And this needs to be controlled now. And I think that the technology is there. We should enforce it now. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. A quick round of final questions, and then we'll take a couple of questions from the chat. I was going to say the floor, but it's not. But so, Fabien, your TNA is a strong advocate for electric vehicles, but of course these electric vehicles also. So although they are zero emission from a climate perspective, they emit air pollutants from brakes and tires. And is there a way that that Euro 7 can address this issue? How should that be done?
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, we are an advocate of for electric vehicles, but we're not saying just merely exchange the existing fleet electric vehicles. But I mean, we will still need cars in the future. There will be cars, and those cars need to be emission free. So just to clarify that, when it comes to the brake emissions, yes, I think a limit for particle emissions from brakes should be introduced, and also the CLOVE consortium has recommended, I think the most ambitious one was 4 milligrams per kilometer. And I think we would like to see that in the proposal. And we have seen, I think it has been talked about already, that there are technologies that can ensure that. Up to 87% reduction of particle emissions from brakes. And here, the most important, that's something Robin touched upon, is that if we mandate that in the Euro 7 regulation, then it will be also affordable because it needs to be mass produced. And then, the company that produces those this technology says, if mass produced, the cost of one unit will be 100 euros, but still affordable. And as we have seen, like 60% of cars will be are basically company cars anyway. So. When it comes to the tire pollution, that's also an important issue, and agree. This is not only applying for vehicles with an internal combustion engine, but also to electric vehicles. However, it's not necessary. We don't necessarily see Euro 7 as the regulation to do that, but more the tire labeling regulation of the European Commission, because tires are exchanged more frequently. It's not that you buy a car and you always have the same tire. So what we would like to see, if the Commission go one step further and get rid of the tires that pollute the most. So to say. Yeah. Okay. That's it. Thanks.
Robin, over to you then, this new generation of standards it will only apply to new vehicles, as you were also saying previously, then how can we make sure that these standards, they deliver clean air in all parts of Europe? You've also mentioned yourself and other panelists have also mentioned the aspect of the differences across Europe in this. And this is, of course, particularly if you bear in mind that the average age of a car is different in parts of Europe. I think it was you, Fabien, who also mentioned that. What do you think?
Well, I think that if we want to deliver emission reductions everywhere in Europe, this is exactly why we need Euro 7. Because we can count on electrification, that's fine. It will surely happen fast in some markets. And we see it already today, but this won't change the fact that in many countries, people will still buy second and third hand vehicles. And before these second and third hand vehicles are electric, it will take more time. And that's how you should see it. And when you consider, for example, coherence with the CO2 standards, which are bringing electrification, it's not about having a trade-off between what you can do in one and the other. It's about reinforcing each other. I think it was a study from the ICCT who showed that Euro 7 could deliver 26% emission reductions in terms of NOx, cumulative emissions up to 2050. And electrification on top of that would only bring marginal degrees. So one standard cannot be done and the others don't have to. I mean, doesn't have to. It's not about training off between them. And just on that, I think it's the point that Fabien just mentioned on the lifetime compliance. I think it's very important as well. If we have cars over 20 years old, we need to make sure that even if there is a deterioration factor, but it needs to be assessed how this car pollutes. And I think this is why we need Euro 7. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. And Martin, I would like to ask you a question, which is from the chat and from one of the colleagues in the audience. So how can we estimate the real impact of Euro 7 on air quality when there are also impacts from other sources?
Well, that's not rocket science, because if you look into the Air Quality Directive, even the one from 1999, I think that was what we call the first order directive. There is a template for an air quality plan. What needs to be covered in such a plan? And it's clear that before you think about measures, you need to know the source contribution. Of course, that's not easy because a particle doesn't have a label saying I'm coming from a tire or from a chimney of from the stack of a factory or whatever, but we have emission inventories, we have models, mathematical models, emission calculation methods. Of course, I mean, there's always uncertainty, but I think we are pretty good in estimating and quantifying the contribution of different sectors. And for NO2, you don't need that sophisticated instrumentation. You need a couple of measurements. It's sufficient to measure at the curbside of a busy road and in the backyard behind the building or in a small side road. And then the difference is striking. It's 30% of what is found at the curbside of the busy road. So the contribution from traffic is crystal clear. For particles, it's more complicated. You need to go into the components, but there are well-known and traditional methods, source apportionment methods, which allow us to quantify that quite robustly. Let me say maybe one word on the non-exhaust emissions, because only on Wednesday I participated in a conference which normally took place in Birmingham, and I listened to Roy Harrison, a very very renowned scientist in the UK, working on particulate matter since two decades, and he presented model calculations from the UK, from London. And because in the model you can easily distinguish between these exhaust and non-exhaust emissions, and only brake emissions contribute at Marylebone Road, which is a very busy traffic spot in London, contributes to 80% of the PM10 and PM2.5 pollution of what WHO recommends. So in quantitative terms, more than 10 microns PM10, because 15 microns is the PM10 guideline recommended by WHO. And this is a lot. So this is a perfect argument to regulate brake emissions. And I think, as it was said already, the technology is there, so let's do it.
Thank you. Thanks, Martin. I have another question for you, Robin. From the audience as well, what is your views then on retrofitting old vehicles? Would that help, and would it complement stronger air pollutant standards?
I mean, it's an interesting solution, and it has to be seen how to properly implement it. I think the most important path is probably the durability requirements that we mentioned in Euro 7, because when we talk about retrofitting, it also depends on what local authorities decide. And if it's retrofitting a combustion engine to an electric car, then fine. But if it's just adding technologies, it has to be seen how legally it is right. I know retrofitting to electric is starting quite big in France. It's something we are looking at very carefully. But to be honest, I mean, it's something for the moment still marginal. But if it becomes a good idea, then let's go for it. In terms of resources, it's surely the way forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Robin. Can I check with all of you, so Fabien, Martin, and Robin, if you would like to say one final line as a message on Euro 7? Is there something that you want to just get across here in the last 2 minutes before we then wrap up?
Maybe if I can, because it's a one-liner. I know the Commission services have been working on this for quite some time now. We are waiting for the proposal, and we hope there won't be new excuses to delay it again. I think it's the fair way to go. The science is there. The preparatory work has been done. We are waiting for it with great impatience.
Thanks, Robin. Martin, yeah. Fine, one liner from you.
Sorry, unmuting. Well, let's make it simple. I think that was said already, and it's true. And I mean, we could get rid of that laboratory testing, at least for these pollutants, where we have the PEMS, the portable emission measurement technique available. And I think this is also a relief to the industry and to the whole system. So the truth is on the road. And if we have robust and trustful RDE measurements, that should be fine.
Thank you. And Fabien?
Maybe not directly a one-liner, but because I also saw this question somewhere in the chat, also the idea of playing or exchanging the CO2 standards with the Euro 7 standards. So I think it was pretty clear there will be, I mean, we don't see an end date of the internal combustion engine in 2025, meaning millions of additional ICE cars, and they need to be regulated. I mean, that's clear. So there is no one way or the other. It has to, both needs to be very ambitious.
Thank you very much. And then on that note, it is just left for me to wrap up. But I want to thank all of you. Also thank Penny from DG Grow, who was with us, for the continued contribution in the very active chat as well. And thank you to the colleagues from Paris, and particularly Dan Lertz, Deputy Mayor, for kicking us off. It was a pleasure to listen to the exchange and to have this level of expertise and insights with us for a whole hour. I'm very grateful it was possible to bring everybody together at this moment of time. Penny, I hope you feel that you have what you need to continue to push for the efforts inside the European Commission. At least here, we have the privilege of having then a fairly sort of unified panel in terms of perspective and views. But we felt that that was also important to possibly counterbalance other aspects of a debate and interest groups that we know is also strongly represented. I think you've been able to hear from this debate that there are very high expectations to a framework with a high level of standards and great measures also for compliance. I think what is left to say that without this ambitious framework, then it seems fairly clear that achieving clean air in cities will not be possible. So, on that note, thank you very much to everybody. Thank you to my colleagues and partners they've been working with to organize this session, particularly Thomas Lime. And have a lovely afternoon, everybody, and a good weekend when you get that far. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being with us. Let us know what you thought by typing @EuroCities or catch up with us on eurocities.eu.